Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune to discuss the as the world turns for the Minnesota Vikings at quarterback. They move on from Kirk Cousins last week. As we discussed, they signed Sam Darnold, and they're going to be talking to and continue to talk to just about every quarterback atop this draft class. So we will have plenty of coverage at StarTribune.com leading up to the draft. We'll have many podcasts leading up to it, but we will start here, Ben, as the Vikings head next to the owners' meetings in Orlando, sunny Orlando, Florida. What are you expecting to hear from Kevin O'Connell? We did hear from the decision makers last week as well, but in terms of their next steps, now that they're going to be talking to J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, all these next guys, what are you expecting to hear from them, and what can come of these next steps that they're taking through the pro day circuit and all that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be the thing that's interesting to hear. And there's not a lot that gets done at the owners' meetings beyond voting on rule changes. I mean, we may have new kickoff rules by next week, and the hip drop tackle may be gone. I mean, those are kind of the two headliners in terms of rules that could change for the 2024 season. Owners vote on those. Otherwise, it's kind of just a big, let's get everybody together in a nice location. I mean, it's more relaxed. People bring their families. So it's not like the combine where they're negotiating with agents. Agents aren't really there very much. So it won't be like tons of business gets done, but we do get to hear from Kevin O'Connell, like you mentioned. And I think one of the things I'm interested to hear is how he plans to go about it with a lot of these quarterbacks in terms of how they're going to evaluate these guys and get to know them, because this decision obviously will define Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's time in Minnesota. And I think they know that. And I think they are as ready for it as they're going to get in terms of the people Kevin O'Connell has put in place in his offensive staff and his process for doing this. My sense of it is they're going to do private workouts in addition to some of these pro days. I mean, obviously J.J. McCarthy's name has come up there. I think they're also going to do a fair amount of going out to meet with these guys where they work out. A lot of these prospects obviously train on the West Coast. They train with private agencies that are getting them ready for their combine days. Obviously that's done, getting them ready for their pro day. So a lot of that's done for people, and then getting them ready for private workouts. So they will probably go out to those sites where players are training and then kind of do their own thing. I think Kevin O'Connell's approach to this is, I don't want to just watch you throw off a script in your pro day that you put together to look great. I want to put you through drills that challenge you, that show what you do in our offense, that give us an idea of what you do and what you look like when not everything's perfect, and help me kind of see how much bandwidth there is to play with here. So that is going to be interesting to hear probably in a little more detail, and just kind of how they are approaching this. And they're obviously going to have their poker face on to some degree with what they do with 11 and 23. But I think every betting mind on this is that they're going to try to move up for one of those top quarterbacks. How aggressive do they get? How aggressive do they feel like they can be? How much of the offseason plan to let Brian Flores kind of remake the defense has gone to what they wanted? I mean, it's going to be interesting to hear a few of those things. We heard some of them when they did the first round of press conferences, but I think there's been another wave of moves since then. And obviously the trade has happened since the last time we heard from Kevin O'Connell. So lots to get to with him down in sunny Orlando next week.
Yeah. What did you make of that trade happened? It was convenient that it happened the next morning right after they addressed the media. But what did you make of that trade for them acquiring the 23rd overall pick from Houston in exchange for effectively 2 second-round picks?
Yeah, I mean, I think the cost of that, if it's just for the 23rd pick, is awfully high. I mean, I think if they paid that to move up from whatever it was, 43, whatever it was, to 23 – they gave up a lot, but I don't think that's the plan here. And I think the fact that they gave up as much as they did tells you that they know the plan and then everybody else knows what they're after. I mean, everybody in the league, I think it's pretty easy to tell they need a quarterback. I mean, it was fairly easy to see that before, but certainly more easy to see that now that Kirk Cousins is gone. I think the price they paid is reflective of what they plan to do with that pick, and that's to package it with 11 to move up to get the quarterback they want. So it was, I think it fits with what we've kind of heard about how they are going to approach this thing, that it's not going to be the Christian Ponder thing of, well, we needed a quarterback. This was the next guy there. Let's take him. That is not how they are going about this. It's let's go get the guy that we feel good about, that we think is going to take us to the promised land. And if we have to pay more to get him, yeah, it's expensive, but these are not the types of players that you get there and get scared about the price. Because as we see, when you get one that works, the surplus of that, both in the first few years of the contract, and even when you pay for the guy, like the Chiefs have done with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, not everybody's going to hit on a Patrick Mahomes, but when you get a player of that caliber, it changes everything. And it does become hard to blanch at the price when you see what these guys do for a team and how much they just change and elevate everything around them. So I think their approach is to say, whatever we need to do to get a guy we think we can build around for the next 10 years, let's do it. And I think this is certainly part of that.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion, the hope, the anticipation, that incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
Yeah, Mike, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of on the same track as Ben. It feels like you don't do that unless you kind of have an idea in place, and they might not know exactly what they're going to do, because they're in this weird position, right, where they are still at a little bit of the mercy of what other teams do, right? Like, they can want Drake May or whoever they might want, but if New England ultimately decides, you know what, a trade down is nice, we could accumulate picks, but we really need a quarterback, we're going to take him. So I think they probably have contingencies along the way, right? Like, if they love Drake May, if that's the guy they want to go after, okay, 3 is probably the spot they need to get to, because it sure seems like Washington might be zeroing in on Jaden Daniels. So if it's Drake May, okay, what do we need to do to get there? Well, we're certainly going to need more than just 11 and then whatever you have. So you get to that pick. Maybe they want J.J. McCarthy. Okay, so now what's that going to take? Can you wait until he falls to you at 11, or do you have to be ready to kind of pounce if it sounds like another team wants him, things like that? So I think there's contingencies, and it was interesting. I listened in on a conference call from Mel Kiper Jr. on Wednesday, and actually talked to him for a little while after the call was done, and his sense is that basically, like, you don't make that trade unless you kind of know what it takes with those picks. So you move to 23 with 11, kind of knowing that you have a plan in place. You don't just accumulate picks. Like, and again, it's not like you exactly know what you're going to do, but you've established contingencies now where whoever they want, and again, Ben can probably speak more to this, and probably will learn more about this in the next few weeks as they do visits, go to pro days, things like that, like who they really like, but they clearly know who they like, and they know what it takes to get that person, and they're getting prepared as much as possible to do that.
That is definitely the case and going to be the story over these next couple of weeks. We did not discuss and have yet to discuss what they did immediately after watching Kirk Cousins leave. The current quarterback, the current starting quarterback under contract for the Vikings, is Sam Darnold. It was interesting to hear from Darnold last week, hear from Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi about that signing. And Kwesi, Ben doesn't want to use the term bridge quarterback. I think he said, I'm done using labels or something like that.
He doesn't want to use competitive rebuild anymore, does he?
He referred to it as that term that I'll never use again. I assume that's the term he was referring to, is competitive
rebuild. I'm guessing
rebuild.
That is.
To me, that just reads as the second year, third year GM is now saying, I need to stop being so honest and calling these guys in these situations what they are. Because that's what Sam Darnold is, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think that you sign a guy on a one-year deal if you plan for him to be anything other than a bridge quarterback. If you thought Sam Darnold was the guy that the Jets drafted with the third overall pick a few years back and you thought you could get that out of him, then you probably don't leave it to chance that you do, and then you're sending him to the open market the next year. I think they see him as, this is a guy that can get us through for now. Maybe we win a few games with him. Maybe Josh McCown gets a little bit more out of him. Maybe they can recreate that awesome meme where they're both brushing their hair back at the same time. But I don't think there's a vision that there's more here than that. And from what I heard, Darnold was excited enough about the possibilities here that it did not become that difficult to get him to agree to a deal. So I think this is kind of what everybody thinks it is. They're not going to label it that because you can't, and you don't know if you're going to get your quarterback yet. You don't know if the other side of the bridge is finished, so to speak. The span from Kirk Cousins to whoever the other guy is needs to be planned out on the other side of it before you can complete it. So I think there's still that piece of it that's going to prevent them from labeling Sam Darnold as anything other than the guy that they expect can help them now. But, you know, the pieces are lined up in a way that
pieces
makes
are in
it
place.
Obvious what they're going to do. The pieces are in place. I mean, Brett Favre was a bridge quarterback once, but no one
can
play.
Can we start a new phrase? They're trying to drive over the bridge while they're building it. Instead of flying the plane while you're building it, they're trying to drive over the bridge while they're building it.
Trying to build a bridge over troubled water.
That too, with Teddy Bridgewater at one time.
Former quarterback. We got Ponder, we got Bridgewater, we got Kirk, we got Favre. Yeah. We need Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, and we got the last decade covered, right? Matt Castle?
There's a Castle joke in there somewhere.
One other thing that Kuiper said too that I thought was interesting was that he said, as far as evaluating prospects, he thinks the gap between Drake May and Jaden Daniels is wider than the gap between McCarthy and May, which is surprising to me. I don't know what you guys think about that, but that didn't seem like the narrative, at least for most of, well, I feel like there was a clear, for a while it seemed like Drake May was like the number two, and then and Daniels had this great, you know, great year, and now there's all this McCarthy steam. I don't know what to make of it all. I thought that was interesting.
So he's got Williams and then Daniels and then down to May and McCarthy.
Yes, but he thinks that Daniels is further ahead of May than May is ahead of McCarthy. Like, he thinks McCarthy is closer to May than May is to Daniels as far as prospects go. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And nobody wants to hear this because everybody's, the only reason you're listening to this podcast is because you want to hear our opinions. You want to hear things that will sway you one way or the other, or hear insight into your favorite team and what direction they're going. But was it a few years ago, 3 years ago, the 49ers traded up to take Mac Jones. Then it became Trey Lance. A year ago, Bryce Young was obviously the best quarterback in the draft. And then CJ Stroud was the guy that the Texans really didn't want, but felt forced to take because of their ownership. And now he's suddenly the best quarterback of that draft class. Like, nobody has any idea. No one knew Patrick Mahomes. No one knows Josh Allen. The Sam Darnold draft that we're talking about, wasn't that the draft? Who went later in that draft? It was the Baker Mayfield,
right?
Darnold.
Was it Lamar Jackson, the 30th pick in that draft?
That's right. Thank you. Yes. So
this was 2018?
2018, when the Vikings could have taken Lamar Jackson instead of signing Kirk Cousins.
And drafting Mike
Full circle. And because the Jets didn't get Kirk Cousins, they drafted Sam Darnold.
And so no one knows.
Well, I think the idea of somebody rising and falling on the board, this is not how this works. I mean, every team has their own board, and they look at it, I think, somewhat to see if it gives some inkling in how the rest of the league feels, or somewhat, I think, for amusement. I think there's certainly some of that that goes on, people reading the mock drafts and this idea of guys rising and falling and all that stuff. Everybody, I think the thing you learn is everybody evaluates it differently because everybody stacks their board differently. How much are we weighting things based on what we need? How much are we not considering that at all? I mean, everybody says we take best player available, but it's best player that was on our board. Well, how was that board stacked? Was that board stacked with a weight on, we really need a left tackle, for example? I'm not saying the Vikings, but Team X needs a left tackle. Do you change what your board looks like as a result of that? And so saying best player available means best player on our board, which is different than most talented player, regardless of position, that may be in this draft. So a lot of this does become trying to parse through it, but realizing that as you do it, you need to take what you hear with a grain of salt. And a lot of these teams miss on a lot of players. I mean, we have a lot of times where, you know, look, if we were going to redraft the Patrick Mahomes draft, Patrick Mahomes will go number one every year. No question about it, because he's obviously the best player in the league and certainly he's the best player in that draft. May turn out to be the best quarterback in NFL history if he keeps doing what he's doing. So the fact that it doesn't work every year the way it turns out means that a lot of people miss on players, or you have players that develop in a way that people weren't expecting. Maybe there are some surprises in a good way. It's not always that a scout miss. It's maybe that a player ends just end up being better once they get in the NFL setting and once they figure out how to do it. So it is not an exact science, and certainly what you hear this time of year is not going to be under oath kind of stuff where nobody is perjuring themselves. Nobody is trying to meet that standard of honesty and accuracy. So you do, you kind of go off of people you trust. You grade your sources, I guess, in terms of, have they lied to me in the past? Have they been truthful in the past? How has this worked out? But you kind of just know that you're doing your best, and some of it is not going to be completely accurate because there's so many filters you're trying to look at the thing through.
One other thing to bolster that, I think I was on Instagram last night, and you know, like trying to watch my feed, but like 75% of my feed now is things that I don't want. It's, you know, it's the stuff that they want to show me. And yeah. I came upon a mock draft, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna click on this. I didn't realize it was an old mock draft, you know, because Instagram kind of cycles through stuff and you get stuff from 2 weeks ago or whatever. Click on it. And so like the first pick, obviously Caleb Williams. Second pick, I think, was Drake May to Washington. And the third pick was Atlanta making a trade with New England to take Drake May or Jaden Daniels. Remember which one. I was like, that, and then I knew, I was like, okay, this is obviously outdated. 2 weeks
or
ago,
is it? Before,
2 weeks ago, people thought that Atlanta was going to trade up to number three. So, like, it's all smoke screens. It's all a flavor of the day type stuff. Let's not forget about that.
Hey, Kirk, you know that no trade clause you got? Surprise.
It was from March 5th, so it's okay. It's okay. It's not how things – our discussion would be a lot different right now, though, if that had actually happened. We would be talking about maybe Kirk being back here, which he's not.
One thing I want to get into that the Vikings decision makers did say on the record, Kwesi, when he was addressing, sitting with Kevin O'Connell, addressing reporters last week, the day after free agency, after they announced their crop of defenders and Aaron Jones and Sam Darnold, Kwesi had mentioned, he was asked, does this mean you have to draft a quarterback in the first round? And he said, basically, I'm not going to say it verbatim, but the crux of what he said was, we need to figure out, you know, where we are. We can go ahead and try to get our, you know, get the next guy, the big name quarterback that changes, you know, your outlook and changes your fortunes on the field, or we can build around that position. And, you know, he referenced the Super Bowl participants last year and basically saying that the Niners were that team that built around the position. Obviously, Chiefs are the team that has the guy. I found that interesting because, Ben, the Vikings are at a point where they cannot control their future. As much as they may want Drake May, as much as they may want J.J. McCarthy or whomever, as Mike mentioned, they're at the behest of, you know, the asking price of one of these teams. And so I guess the fascinating thing for me in that this crossroads they find themselves in is, do they grade a guy, and we can't know this, but it's a thought experiment. Like, do they grade a guy like J.J. McCarthy as worthy of that number four pick of trading up with Arizona, which might only cost number 11, number 23. Cause that means you're saying he's a game changer. He is, you know, that Josh Allen or whatever, that next type of guy. Or, you know, do they not view him as that? Cause that's where like these individual grades of how they view these guys is really going to change their approach to this draft, or can they wait on a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix at 23 overall or whatever? To me, that's going to be the crossroads that's fascinating, because as they sit at number 11, they truly cannot, if they had a deal in place, it would be done, a la the 49ers from a few years ago. So I think they can have an idea of what it's going to cost, but what's fascinating to me is going to be, what can they manage to get done? And then how do they, you know, grade these guys accordingly to where they're going to jump up?
Well, and the other piece that I wonder about here is if they are trading up to 23 and the contingency comes to play that they don't get any of the quarterbacks that they feel are worth it at that point, and say all of them are gone. Say McCarthy doesn't even slip to 11. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, but just for the idea of the thought experiment, is the plan then to take Penix or Nix at 23? And if so, are you doing that because you thought you couldn't get them in the second round, or you think they're worth those spots? I mean, it does seem like there's been this grouping that's developed where McCarthy is closer to the top than he was, because I think early on looking at this, it seemed like it was, early on, it was Williams and May, and then kind of everybody else. And then it kind of became Williams, May, and Daniels, and everybody else. And now we've kind of put McCarthy separating from that chase pack, to use the cross-country term. And then you kind of have everybody else behind there, whether it's Penix, Nix, Bo Melton, who throws the ball 90 million yards. Those guys seem like they've kind of not kept up in the opinions of it. And Penix, I think especially, is interesting because there was this discussion, is he going to be worth the 11th pick? Is that somebody you'd take there? Doesn't seem like we're talking about that as much at this point. So I'm curious what they think of those guys, because I know last year at 23, their thought process was, especially when it was a guy that they knew was going to have to take over from Kirk, we don't really love the idea of Will Levis or Hendon Hooker coming in with that level of expectations. And is that a opinion they hold about quarterbacks at the back of the first round in general, or was that that class? I think there's a lot of interesting things to try to find out and suss out about how they feel regarding all of these quarterbacks beyond the ones that are going to go at the top, because this is still, I think, a deeper quarterback class than we expect it to be next year. And they, that may be wrong, but if you don't do it this year, you're looking at a maybe not as good of a quarterback class. And you're looking at these guys heading into year four, not having addressed the quarterback position. So the tension becomes, do we reach? Because I don't think they want to do that. I think philosophically, they do not want to do that. I also don't think they want to wait. So it does kind of, you have these two things that are pushing against each other a little bit. One is saying, let's be patient and make sure we get the guy we want. Let's not just bring somebody in here. The other one is saying, hey, we kind of need a quarterback and we kind of need to figure out what the long-term future is going to be at this position. So it's a lot to negotiate. I think in the end, they will do what they have to do and make the Godfather offer, as it were, to move up. But, if they decide that that isn't possible, or the Patriots say, I don't care what you give us, we are staying at three and picking Drake May, then what do? You have to find another way around it. So that's where this becomes awfully fascinating.
Yeah, Mike.
The Josh Dobbs thing really screwed this up in terms of, and we weren't saying that at the time because they were trying to make the playoffs, but looking back on it, I mean, all of the people that were sitting there kind of saying they should lose for the draft status, this is the one moment I am going to entertain your side of this. I don't typically take that side of things, but if you are that person, this is your moment. Those two games they won pushed them from being fifth or sixth, and then it's a lot easier to move up to three if you feel like you need to do that than it is from 11. So the Josh Dobbs two victories and then the shutout victory in in Las Vegas moved them out of really being in a better spot to go get the quarterback they want.
I believe, and I'm not 100% sure because I don't know how this would affect their strength of schedule, but Tankathon anyway, which is what, the go-to for the draft order. Yep. I believe they had just lost one of those games, like the Falcons game where Jaren Hall gets hurt. Josh Dobbs has no business being in that game. If they had just lost that game, they would have had the number six pick because they would have vaulted a bunch of 7 and 10 teams and then been at the top of the strength of schedule for the 6 and 11 teams. So yeah, it wasn't even just the one, to your point. It was the two games. It was just one game.
Yeah.
If Dobbs gets sacked on that fourth down play that became part of his legend, they lose that game and maybe they have a higher pick. Although you can also play that out. Go back to it. They were 1-4 and Justin Jefferson had just gotten hurt.
Yeah.
Then they had a terrible win over, was it the Bears, where like Tyson Bagent came in the game and they still almost lost. It was like 19.
Jordan Hicks, game-winning touchdown.
What's that?
Jordan Hicks.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, they're off. People forget, like, the Kirk narrative became very strong as the year went on. Like, oh, man, he beat the 49ers and Packers. They would have made the playoffs if he hadn't been hurt. But, like, they were bad in some of those games, like the Carolina game, the Chicago game. Like, their offense was not really good in the first six games of the year. And they easily could have lost
turnovers.
True.
They put up a ton of yards. It was the turnovers.
If they would have lost that Bears game, though, we might have been talking about a fire sale at the trade deadline. We were already like, Kirk was already getting asked, like, would you waive your no trade before that game? So anyway, you're right. There could have been the tanking going on there and all that stuff. I mean, to Ben's point, though, I think the curious thing is, right, like, they're in this weird position where they absolutely need a quarterback, but they aren't a team that can just automatically get the quarterback they want. Like, a lot of other teams find themselves in this position and have a top five pick, like you're talking about. Like, they have put a lot of eggs in this basket, so to speak, where, like, they've got to be able to pull this off. Cause I don't think here, I think if they don't get a quarterback this year, that to me is a disaster. Like, if they can't draft the quarterback they want, that is a disaster, because they have put everything into this. They have said, this is our plan. If you have to push back the timeline by a year, basically, because you can't get your guy, and then you're going into next year and you're probably going to be okay again. You're probably going to have like the 12th to 15th pick again. When does it end? You got to do it now. And there's no guarantee they can.
Well, the other thing I would say quickly is I think a lot of the moves they've made in free agency would be with the assumption that they are going to get the quarterback thing fixed. I don't know that you go and sign this many players, this many veterans, to ostensibly have a better defense. I mean, and these haven't been break the bank type signings, but you know, the first group of them they did was a pretty large investment in accomplished players in terms of Jonathan Greenard, Ben Gankel, Blake Cashman, and just saying, let's get a more representative front seven. If you think you're not getting the quarterback, wouldn't you just say, let's not put a competitive team out there this year? Let's try to just get to the point where we don't have to even parse through them. If there's one guy next year that we want, we make sure we get that one guy. You still have to sell Jefferson on all of this. I think that's the other piece of it. But the moves they've made to me would suggest that they think they are going to get the quarterback thing figured out. And we're going to have a core around that player that helps him come in and be successful relatively quickly. And we're going to enjoy our window where we have cap space and we have a young quarterback and there's a better defense around him, and we'll continue to add to it and do all of these things to have a championship or at least a contending window if the quarterback works out. I tend to think that they feel like they're going to get that piece. It's just a matter of time.
That is a good point about their free agent moves. And it got me thinking about like what Tampa Bay did last year.
Unless they just can't help themselves.
Well, yeah, that's
in terms
true.
Of the super competitive thing.
Yeah.
But continue.
Well, just to continue your point about that, because I think about the Buccaneers, I think of other ownership groups where you can tell when a team is not trying. You can tell when a team is going into a season saying, you know what, we're not going to try to be aggressive about filling all the holes that we've got on this roster this year. We're going to, you know, get the bridge quarterback and kind of limp through this year. And I think about the Bucs after Tom Brady left and what they did with Baker Mayfield. They didn't, you know, that basically Baker outplayed the contract they gave him. I don't think anybody signed him because it was a competition in training camp with him and Kyle Trask.
Yep. Like,
this was not supposed to be a thing where Baker was the savior, as he was winning in week one against the Vikings, earning the contract extension. whereas the Vikings are doing this a little differently, where they signed Sam Darnold to that Baker style contract from a year ago, but then they've gone ahead and been aggressive about filling these holes where they had over $60 million guaranteed at signing in those three defensive free agents you mentioned. And those are all announced or agreed to within hours of the window opening on Monday of free agency. This was a very
before Kirk got done.
Yeah, this was a very aggressive approach to free agency from them, and a style that says, you know, and from what we've heard even behind the scenes with the team, is that they're refreshed to not have to pay Kirk Cousins all that money. Yeah. Like, we've got now a chunk that we can go spend and play with. And they did. And that, to me, says that this front office is serious about continuing the competitiveness of this roster and not just lying over flat and you know, trying to be what the Wilfs want them to be, which is that year over year competitive franchise that doesn't need a tanking year or two to totally rejuvenate. So I do find that that's a good point about where they're headed here, that their free agent moves did signal that this is going to be kind of an all-in quarterback class, because they bring in even more edge rushers after in Jahad Ward earlier this week. Yeah. And there Geiger Hill, another linebacker as well. So to me, this doesn't seem like they're setting up for, you know what, we're just going to sit back and take the best edge rusher at 11 and take Bo Nix or Michael Penix at 23. This says to me, we're going to continue with what we've always heard about this for now going on a year plus. They want to be aggressive with the 2024 quarterback draft class. They think the answer is there. And now that Kirk Cousins isn't here, it seems like they're even more going to be even more aggressive. It would seem to be that they should be even more aggressive moving forward. What do you think?
I also wonder if some of the pitch to the Wilfs has been, if we let Kirk go, we will get it fixed. And we're not going to have to go through this big drop, because we have Justin Jefferson. We will eventually have TJ Hockenson again. We have Jordan Addison. We have two tackles that we like that are bookends for our offensive line. We have a good defensive coordinator that we are going to trust to rebuild this defense. We will have a good situation to drop a quarterback into, where he gets to learn from everybody, from Grant Udinski to Josh McCown to Wes Phillips to Kevin O'Connell, and have a lot of pieces around him to support his development. He's going to be in a good situation. He can develop quickly, and then when he does that, hit the gas. I would not be surprised at all if that was part of the pitch to ownership of, yeah, we're going to have to reboot it here at quarterback with Kirk gone. But I think some of the way they've set up would suggest that if they develop the quarterback the right way, this does not have to be a long drop off or even much of one at all.
Yeah, Mike, obviously the big question going forward is going to be that defensive depth, and with these draft resources seemingly all being allocated at quarterback, if they make that big jump up to get the guy, what they did in free agency, is that all going to be enough? Are all those guys they brought in going to be enough? Those are going to be the big questions for me anyway, moving forward here beyond the big quarterback one. Because they don't have now those draft picks to fill the need of, we don't have a developmental corner anymore because we blew this draft pick, or a safety or a linebacker. And I'm just, you know, naming off the top of my head the 2022 draft class.
Yeah, and maybe it's a slight philosophical shift. I don't really know how they're thinking about this, but maybe they've decided that, you know, signing four or five defensive stopgaps is better value than spending their money elsewhere or even worrying about how you're going to develop draft picks. Maybe they're finding new value there or something like that. I don't know. You're right though. Like it's counter to the old model that we're used to, right? The Spielman model, the Zimmer model that we saw so long was like draft and develop. You're going to have this core together for a long time. I think they're still kind of doing that on offense. Maybe what they're saying is, hey, we've got a great defensive coordinator right now. Get him some guys who can play and they can be pretty good still. Maybe we don't have to stock up on defensive draft picks right now because we can still be pretty good. Maybe that gets addressed in, you know, 26 and beyond. If they have to move up to three, we're probably talking about next year's number one also, right? So then you're not going to have a first or a second next year. So you're not going to be able to draft much this year or next year at the top of the draft, at least. But by 26, you could at least start talking about, hey, that's where you're going to restock your defensive talent. And maybe they just have to shift for now to kind of more of a 1 and 2 year flyers and a few guys to build around on defense.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. We got a lot of questions quick we can answer over the next 10 to 15 minutes. VG wants to know, one of our longtime listeners, and Ben, this is a good kind of jumping off point for what we were just talking about. He says, if the Wilfs were okay with this eventual rebuild after Kirk Cousins, why did the team wait 2 years to start this process? Why not cut the cord with Kirk immediately?
Well, I think they at least considered that. I mean, we've heard about it and we've talked about it. I think we've reported it over the last couple of years. When they first took over, there was a moment that they considered blowing it up, like trading Cousins, letting Adam Thielen go. A lot of the veteran moves that we saw, I think, in the offseason before 23 may have happened sooner if they had decided to go that way. I mean, there was the Neil Hunter trade discussions that happened around that time. They were entertaining the possibility of moving him. So I think where they were at the time, it probably requires a little bit of managing up. You know, Kwesi has said that no one has ever told him that you have to be competitive every year. But I think you look over the course of 19 seasons with the Wilfs, and the only time they've really ever said, or not even said, the only time they've really done this where it's let's just have a young team and deal with what happens as we go was after the Favre run ended, right, and crashed and burned spectacularly after the jet to Hattiesburg got drifted off course in 2010. They turned that roster over because there was just no way around it. They were old. They had players that just weren't going to be able to play anymore. And then they said, we got to go in on the quarterback and try to build around Christian Ponder. That's really the only time. And you even think about that. They win 10 games in 2012 because Adrian carried them to the playoffs and they had a soft schedule and they got some wins early. What did they do the next offseason? They went and signed Greg Jennings on day one of free agency for like $45 million over 5 years. That is not a move you make if you are committed to this. We need to restock the young core and be cheap for a while and develop this whole thing. It's let's go back in and try to win right now and try to have an option right now. And that's when they signed Matt Cassel as the backup. So there was a lot even then that told you that this idea that they have the stomach for what Ryan Poles has done in Chicago is just not the way it's going to work for a very long time. So there's probably a little bit when you take over, you're a new coach, you're a new GM, that you aren't going to maybe have the latitude to say, let's just tear this thing down to the studs when we haven't been that far away from going to the playoffs the last few years. I think it takes a little bit of managing up there. And they also, I think, thought that Kevin O'Connell can get more out of Cousins. He can get more out of the roster. And really, in year one, that was proven correct. I mean, they win 13 games and host a playoff game for, I think, the third time in the Wilfs ownership, maybe fourth. And I think a lot of it is just the dynamics of the people involved and the way the organization has worked. It may be different than how some people look at it in a vacuum, but this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Well, yeah, and it's important. I remember the context of the transition from Mike Zimmer to Kevin O'Connell is the Wilfs sitting up there in TCO in the field house when they have the introductory press conference.
Yeah.
They're saying, you know, we feel like we can be super competitive right away with this change. They felt like that roster was fit to win with the right chemistry and the right culture and all those words that, you know, all the good vibes that Kevin O'Connell brought into the door. And they were right in going 13-4. And then they were also right recognizing that that was unsustainable and how they went that way and blowing it up the year after that. I know we reported a lot over the 2 years with Kirk and O'Connell, but to my understanding, in that spring of 2022, when they first got the job, that was when we had heard potential trade talks with the Colts and there were some things being floated around, but I don't think it ever got super close for at that point. And then you, Ben, had heard the Danielle Hunter trade stuff. I think that was 2023. I think that was last year, wasn't it?
No, I think in 22, because it was the thing about picking up the $18 million roster bonus. And I think that was a couple of years ago. I mean, there's been stuff with
Danielle. It's been all the years. It's been every year.
It's always been contract stuff.
Yeah, with him. So anyway, but they did eventually blow it up then 23, as we're talking about with Thielen, Kendricks, the guys that they ended up, Dalvin Cook, letting go. So with Kirk, it happened. It took it 2 years, but I wonder how much of that had to do with the alignment of these draft classes and the fact that, Ben, we had heard last year that they knew this 2024 was the year to take the quarterback, not necessarily last year. And you had all the stuff reported about Anthony Richardson and how much they liked him. Like, clearly there were guys at the top of the class last year that they would have made that leap for, but they weren't in a position to move on from Kirk last year. And he was still under contract, right? It was just another restructuring.
That was when they did the voids, and they were trying to go from 23 up to the top. There was not, their own pick was not 11. Their own pick was 23, and they had no second rounders. So to do that, you're giving up a number of future firsts to move up that high. I think the cost of that was pretty prohibitive.
Yeah. So just walking through it all, I guess, year to year, it would make sense to me anyway, from the outside, of why the reasoning for why they would end up sticking with Cousins last year. And this being the year where they drew the line, especially when the Falcons came in with the offer that they did. Mike, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's a pretty good timeline. I think the one thing that complicated that, the two things that complicated it, were going 13-4 in 2022, even though that was a lot of, unsustainable, smoke and mirrors is the wrong way to put it, but like, they won a lot of games that you're not going to 11-0. So like, they had a decision to make after that year, like, okay, there's a public perception that maybe we're close, but I worried going into 23 that they were going to try to keep the band back together. And they did a pretty good job of kind of like cutting ties with the people they needed to cut ties with to set up this year. But the other complication that we can't forget about is like, what's the conversation like right now? If Cousins never gets hurt, they go 9-8 and make the playoffs. Like, what's their thinking right now? If that would have happened, was this the plan all along and they would have executed it no matter what, or would they have been tempted more at this point to think differently had they been, back-to-back playoff appearances with Cousins?
I think there still would have been a limit to what they would have done with a Cousins contract. In that scenario, he's obviously healthy. He's coming off a great year. Maybe it's a different story. I think even last year, though, it's like they were obviously very happy with the way he played in 22. Statistically, wasn't quite as shiny, but won a lot of games, won a lot of games late, did a lot of what they wanted him to do, and they still said, this is as far as we're willing to go. So I don't think it would have changed it a ton, but it also would have been interesting, because then you're talking about picking 20th or something.
Right.
Then you're not packaging that pick with another late first rounder to be like, oh yeah, this will get us up to 3. You're saying that gets us up to, I don't know, 7, 8, something like that. I haven't looked at the math. I don't have it in front of me, but something like that. And that doesn't get it done either. So I don't know. I mean, this stuff is tricky. I also think anybody that looks at that 2022 season as, if only that hadn't happened. I mean, you can do it. I get it mathematically. I get the fact that what everybody wants, especially in this fan base, is the payoff. They want the championship to validate all of these years of waiting and suffering and all of these things. I get that. I also think if we look at seasons as this binary, did they win a championship or was it a failure? By that metric, 31 teams fail every year. And I don't know. I think you kind of have to grade these things on a spectrum more than just the on-off switch, especially with that season. Cause like you can't tell me with a straight face that you didn't watch that season as a fan and have a heck of a lot of fun. I don't know that I would be sitting here saying, I've kind of gone back to my normal take on this of seasons are not failures if they don't result in a championship. They may make drafting harder, but sometimes you can still look at a season like that and say, this was a lot of fun, and I'm glad it happened.
Mike wants to know, Mike from Canada wants to know, what's the likelihood the Vikings are going to get some kind of compensation if the league rules that Atlanta tampered in the Kirk Cousins negotiations?
Ben and I went over this on text message because I was curious about this too, but I think Ben knows the answer to this.
I might know the answer to this. I don't think, I mean, just on precedent, I don't think the Vikings get the picks. I think the Falcons would forfeit the picks, but they just disappear. It's like if the NFL said the Falcons are forfeiting their first round pick, there would just be 31 picks in the first round that year, not 32. That does help the Vikings indirectly in the sense that you now are not picking 11 and 23, you're picking 10 and 22. So the teams that are ahead of the Falcons don't benefit from it as much as the teams behind them in terms of trade value of those picks. So, I mean, it's a sneaky little angle to this, but that maybe helps them. I don't think pick number 8 is coming to the Vikings or even like a third or anything like that. I don't think the Vikings are going to end up with a transfer of picks from this so much as the Falcons may stand to lose a pick because of Cousins tampering.
I don't think the Falcons are going to lose a first-round pick either, because Cousins talked to a guy a day earlier, was recruiting a receiver when he wasn't even signed yet. But it was
the only thing I'd say to that is if Cousins was talking to the trainer because the trainer had early access to his medical records and that was part of what got the deal done, that seems a little different to me. But if it was just a, hey, looking forward to working with you, how you feeling? Thanks, Achilles been good. You saw the video I posted, obviously. Looking forward to working with you. I mean, that doesn't rise to that level. If there's something more premeditated there, then I think it's a different question. But overall, I agree with you. Independently.
Yeah, for the precedent point that you guys are making, the most recent big headline examples, the Dolphins, Stephen Ross getting fined $1.5 million for tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton following a 6-month investigation stemming from Brian Flores's racial discrimination lawsuit against the NFL. And the Dolphins did have their first round pick taken away. Goodell called it, quote, an unprecedented scope and severity of tampering by the Dolphins. So it would take so much to get a first round pick taken away, like tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. I would be shocked in this case. And also you guys made the greatest point to this, and that the Vikings would not get any kind of reward. The teams that get victimized generally do not get the kind of reward. And frankly, the NFL is not going to want to incentivize people getting caught tampering because they know it happens. So the NFL is not going to be like, hey, let's start incentivizing teams for ratting other teams out because y'all do it all anyway. So why would we want that mess on our hands? Frankly, the NFL is probably mad that they have to, quote unquote, investigate this anyway, because they know this happens every year with everybody.
But this is part of what
the Falcons come out and say, well, all right, we've got some receipts too that we're happy. Oh, what's this text message from somebody in with the 612 area code to I'm not saying it's happened, but if you don't think it happens, I guess the best way to say it is it's Chinatown, Jake.
It would be two things. One, this is kind of what O'Connell was talking about at the combine, though, right? When he did that NFL Network hit, and he was like, yeah, a lot of people have been talking to him. Whether supposed to or not, they're already talking to him. And the other thing is, regardless of whether the Vikings get compensation, which they don't, it would be hilarious if the Falcons lost any sort of draft capital because Kirk Cousins wasn't properly coached on what to say at his introductory press conference. Maybe he should get off the podcast.
Zim was right.
Zim's always right. The more time goes on, the more Zim was right about a lot of things.
The older I get, the smarter Zim is. The older I get, the smarter my dad is.
On that note, we will bid you guys adieu. Thank you for sending questions. We will get to more of them on future editions of the podcast. Please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com, where Ben will have coverage from the owners' meetings in Orlando and the latest.
Unless I get snowed in here.
That's true, unless too much snow falls for the first time all winter in Minneapolis in the end of March. All right, all. Thank you for checking this out. Again, please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com.